This episode of the Free Lunch Podcast is brought to you by the Selma Project, an initiative created to infuse hope and inspiration into the youth of Selma, Alabama through culture, art, and entertainment. This initiative calls on friends of the Selma movement to use their gifts and talents to pave a road of success for future generations. Check them out, selmaproject.com, and brought to you by faithful listeners everywhere. And now to the show, welcome to the New South Movement.
Ladies and gentlemen, a classic. A classic. A classic.
Bismillah. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gon' come. Yeah, I chose the path chose me. This is Allah's plan, divine decree. Natural high, window sheet, upper parallel view, let the ghetto see. BK, and OLA, OMF, GLD, amazing grace.
Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, home of the New South Movement. No games, no gimmicks, and I got my boy BG's with me. BG's, what's happening?
Third time, here's a charm, Free Lunch Podcast, your boy BG, the 27 kid, in the lovely city of Atlanta, Georgia. What's happening, Ty?
Way up, I feel blessed.
That's how you feel?
I really do, man. I do. Let's get straight to it, because we have a special guest today. Someone that I've known for man, it feels like I've known this person for over 15, 20 years now. I don't want to give it away, but he has an appointment following this podcast. So I want to make certain that we get as much of it as we can. And I want to give him his proper introduction. So, to the podcast listeners, to the mothers that are single parents that are raising sons or daughters or athletes, to the listeners that have little children that they're just trying to raise them to be a professional athlete or what have you. I really want you to tune in into this podcast, because I think today's guest is going to be able to shed a lot of light from his experiences of playing professional basketball. So just to give this person a proper introduction, standout player at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. I remember when he got given credit for a triple-double that he had in one of his college collegiate games. He's had the privilege of playing professional basketball with the Milwaukee Bucks on their summer league team. He's played for Mike Davis, Mike Anderson at UAB. He's won a professional basketball championship overseas in Israel. I've known him for years. And for no further ado, what I'd like to do is introduce to the audience, to the Free Lunch Podcast family, Paul Delaney III. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Man, doing real good. How does it feel to be home, sir?
It feels good. You know, it always feels short. You know, you only get a certain amount of time. But while I'm here, I just make the most of it. And it's great. Great to be back home.
So I really reached out to have you on the podcast because I really want you to be able to share your story with the audience. A lot of people, you know, a lot of folks have never met a professional athlete. They don't know the work and the grind that you put in. And also with you having the privilege to play overseas and really experience life outside the United States. You know, I read a quote once that said, "You're only as limited as the land you see." So a combination of all those things, me talking with you, just knowing you from since you were growing up and having the privilege to just see you develop into the man that you are today, I really felt like you would be a perfect guest to be on the Free Lunch Podcast. A lot of the things you shared with our conversation yesterday, I really want you to share that today. So, like I mentioned earlier, for the Free Lunch Podcast listeners, you're really in for a treat today. So, first question, Paul, is yesterday you had an event where you put on a basketball camp for the youth ages 6 to 9. Can you kind of talk about how that camp went and kind of what you did at that camp?
I believe the camp went well. For our first time, we had about 30-35 campers. I had 10 coaches come out and help volunteer. You know, the kids were very engaged, and that was the most important thing. A lot of them may not be highly skilled, but at the same time, we just want to gauge their interest, teach them about the game, and just ultimately let them have fun and let them know that there's people out here that do care about their well-being.
And it's interesting that you was able to put on something for the youth. I'll kind of let BG talk about his upcoming event that he has planned for as part of the Selma Project and as part of some of the efforts he's doing with the young folks. But it kind of reminded me yesterday when we were talking about the riots and the frustration that was actually happening up here in Baltimore area with the youth being just frustrated with not having anything to do. So with you being able to come down as a professional athlete and be able to put on a camp, I really just commend you for doing that. But also at a macro perspective, how it really gives the kids something to do this summer. And you don't really see a lot of activities being funded by professional athletes these days. So I commend you for being able to do that.
Well, thank you, sir. You know, I appreciate it. But, you know, just to piggyback off what you said, I do believe that it is a shortage of athletes putting their money back into the community. You know, in my perspective, there's no reason why if you're making such and such $1 million a year, why you shouldn't be holding free things for the kids of the community throughout the whole year. You know, you're not going to really miss it. Mm-hmm. Besides going to the club or buying the jewelry, you know, I just feel like we have to give back to the community because they are our future.
What do you think it is that keeps so many professional athletes from doing just that?
Honestly, I just think it's the lack of knowledge sometimes. You know, when you come from these type of neighborhoods and, you know, people praise you for being a great athlete, for being the best player, you start getting these gifts, the shoes, the special treatment. Once you leave up out of there and you start getting with the agent, you kind of go off into a whole nother world. You know, it's not many, and people don't realize that. Yeah. Once you become a professional athlete, you're in your own world. It's a community in itself within that, you know. And a lot of them, they just don't give back. They don't see the people before them do it, so therefore they don't do it. Right. You know, the only thing that we see via social media, Facebook, Instagram, on the internet, is either three things. Either they getting in trouble, either they partying, or either they having a girl up there.
For sure.
You know, and mm-hmm. that's the only things that the media portrays. That's the only thing that they put out there. So these, you know, these kids is getting the money at 19, 20. They've been getting millions of dollars their whole life. Mm-hmm. So what can you really tell them? You mm-hmm. can't really tell them too much.
Right.
You don't have that will to come back and do it for free. You know, you're always taught that you're an athlete, you have to market yourself. You do too much things free, people are not going to eventually want to pay. So it's always about how can I make that dollar, if not for me, for my friend that I'm going to let run the camp. So then now they're thinking, well, okay, I'm going to use his name. I'm going to get kids off of his name. So how can I make money for myself? And it gets to a point where money has to be thrown out, and it just has to be the betterment of the community, development of the community.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, let's talk about your story. Like I said, I really see you as more of a brother because of our relationship. And I really want to take a step back because I think that in a time where everything is instant gratification, I think a lot of people don't understand the work that it takes to be a professional athlete. And I really want you to be able to shed light on your story, because what a lot of people don't know is that when Paul was in the eighth and ninth grade, he was rated, well, you rated number one or number two in the city of Atlanta at one point.
Like top five.
Yeah, he was in the top five for the majority. And then just watching you in the ninth grade, I want you to talk about that ninth grade team. And also just talk about the AAU teams and the players that you've played with. Your entire career, your entire life, you've been one of the highest rated players in the city of Atlanta, but then also you've seen players kind of transition off and not make it to the next level. You've been recruited by some of the top colleges, and you've even had the privilege of playing in the NBA on the Milwaukee Bucks. So can you just kind of shed light on the day in the life growing up in Decatur, GA, and really just the work ethic you put into getting to where you're at today?
You know, honestly, you know, first off, we give thanks to God for the people that he's put in my life. You know, it started before the ninth grade. You know, I was very fortunate to have my father, who was one of my very first coaches. And he really instilled in me hard work. Because I did basketball, I ran track, I played soccer. So our Saturdays in Decatur were full of activities.
Right.
And in order to do all those activities, he instilled that you have to do the work. You have to be in the best shape. Because you can't go from a soccer game and then go run track without being in shape because you're going to tire out. You know, so it was a lot of days that people don't understand that. For instance, I would go to an AAU practice. We would practice about an hour and a half, 2 hours. After that, my dad would have me stay like an extra hour. I would be doing simple things as running suicides, you know, dribbling the ball up and down through the cones again, working on my left-hand layups, right-hand layups. And doing that, he also instead, like, it's hard work. In order to perfect your craft, you have to hold yourself to a higher standard than most people will. And, you know, like I said, getting back to high school. Ninth grade, yeah, I went to Whitfield Academy, private school right off South College.
Can I, before you even get into that, let me tell this story, BG. So I go, Paul's in the ninth grade. I drive up from Atlanta to go to one of their games and to hang out with his sister, who was basically my sister. And I'm in the bathroom. I'm in the bathroom using the bathroom. Paul walks in. He used it before that game. And I look up, and I'm like, that look like Mark Price. And Paul says, oh, that's my coach. So not to, so not to interrupt you, but just to give you a sense of the level of coaching and the competition he was playing with.
And Mark Price is a legendary, long-time NBA basketball player, for those that don't know. We know we got some people on this podcast that don't know that kind of stuff.
Oh, you're right. For Cleveland Cavaliers, played with Matt Doherty, and just look him up. Real longevity in the NBA. But go ahead, Paul. Sorry to interrupt.
And that in itself was – now, that was an experience, you know. He was giving us the techniques, just the way he shot the ball so quick from any position. And also on that team, we had Josh Smith.
Yep, I was going to talk about that, but go ahead.
Another NBA player. Uh-huh.
Exactly. You know, me and Josh, you know, his dad brought him to come play with us at the school. Like, we had a nice team. You know, it was full of energy. We had, you know, myself. We also had another cat on there named Tim Morris. At that time, he was ranked one of the top players in Georgia. He ended up having a career at Stanford. You know, now I think he's a college coach down in Alabama or somewhere. I don't know for sure. But he is coaching at the collegiate level. We had another point guard, Ryan Lamb. He was one of the top point guards in Georgia at the time. But now he's not currently hooping. So, you know, we had a lot of talent. We had the coaching. But I think what separated us was we had that drive to be great. It wasn't that I wanted to be good. It wasn't that, you know, oh, this person has a name, so I'm going to shy away by giving them credit based upon their name. It was that I had something to prove every time I walked on the court. And I just wanted to prove that I was the best player on the court, period. I don't care what name they had, where they went, I was the best player on the court.
At that stage, you're young. You're about ninth grade, mm-hmm. right? So at that point, are you performing on that level because you wanted to please your father and your people around you? Or was it in your heart? Like, was it in your heart to be like, I love this game and I'm going to compete and be the best competitor to step on this court, like you say?
I think that drive came when I was younger, probably like 7, 8. Because, you know, my dad, Paul Lewis Delaney Jr., you know, went to Carver, played at Morris Brown. And around the city of Atlanta, he's something like a legend. No matter where we went to Joyland, we went to Carver Home, even if we went over to Adamsville, like, you know, no matter where we went, everybody knows who he was. So as a young boy, I'm, you know, trying to dribble my ball as best I could, you know. And as soon as they come up, they're like, oh, this your son? He going to play like you? Like, he all right. You know,
yeah,
he getting there.
Yeah, yeah.
So after you start to hear that for so many times, it just became the fact, like, look, I want to prove like I'm better than my dad. You know, I want my own name because everybody will automatically put me underneath my father because we got the same name. Mm-hmm. So that drive came early, and that what drove me to mm-hmm. prove to other people he's the best.
And that's what that legacy will do, because I can remember when you talk about that, my dad was like that in our city, Coach Gosar. So it was like, you Coach Gosar's son, so you automatically, you got that feeling that you take that pride. But at the same time, even when you probably was working with him, y'all probably had some games or something, mm-hmm. you're trying to beat him. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, you can't beat him, but it's always your thing. Like, I want to be better. I want to take it to the next level. And that's so important. And I think a lot of people sometimes think about athletes because we see a lot of the TV, like the Friday Night Tights, and you have these type of coaches that are pushing kids to do stuff that they ultimately don't want to do. But for some of us, it becomes a part of who you are.
It becomes
and
your
love
life.
It. Yeah, and you
it becomes
love
your
it.
Life.
And you're passionate about it, and you it powers you through your life. Like, you want to be the best, and not only on that basketball court, on that field, but then it crosses over to your real life. Yeah.
So Paul, let me ask you this then. So that ninth grade team, and BG, just to give you perspective, that his ninth grade team where he had Mark Price as the head coach, you guys started, what, four freshmen and one sophomore, right?
Yeah.
And that team made it to the semifinals or the finals in the state of Georgia?
We lost in the semifinals to Dwight Howard's team.
Okay. So it was Dwight Howard's team y'all lost to?
Yeah, Southwest Atlanta Christian. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, we lost to them in the semifinal game to go to the championship.
So from that team and from that experience, you know, what did you take away? And what happened after that ninth grade year with you and basketball?
Honestly, I felt like on that team, and, you know, for those, I ended up eventually leaving that school, and I went to Shamley High School my 10th grade year. My ninth grade year, I started to realize that the team wasn't focused. I felt like the team wasn't focused around me. Me personally, I felt like I was the best player on the team, to be truthful. But Tim, you know, his dad and some coaches, I felt like that is where they put their main focus, to focus the team around him. And for me, I wasn't with that. You know, I was already like, man, I'm going to a private school, you know, where I felt like I was just looked upon as cattle. You know, the only black people that went to the school played sports.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was certain comments that happened at the school that, you know, ultimately was like, yeah, I need to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I wanted to go back to public school. And for me, it was the best decision of my life, you know, for socially and basketball-wise, because I went somewhere where I was the focus, mm-hmm. where I could get into the gym. I used to have my coach pick me up 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, before the buses came, just so I can get to the gym and get me a workout in before school started.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't regret that decision at all?
Yeah, I don't regret it. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, I think it made me into a better person.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you leave. You go play at Chamberlain for 3 years, starting with your sophomore year. You have some really good games. You have some really good experiences. But then you have a setback. Can you kind of talk about that setback and leading up to that setback and the changes from that setback how it affected you?
Well, leading up into the setback, you know, I was one of the top 5 seniors in the state, players in the state. I never forget it like it was yesterday. We was playing North Springs. It was the second game of the season.
Mm-hmm. And what year is this? You're a junior or a senior?
This is my senior year.
Okay.
We had just played Southwest DeKalb probably about 3 nights before. I had like 32. So I'm coming into North Springs, and I'm feeling it. I might have rallied off like 12 points in like the first 3 minutes. I was making everything. I go up for a rebound, come down on somebody's foot. My foot turns, and next thing you know, I got a fractured 5th metacarpal in my left foot. And I basically, with that injury, I missed the whole senior year.
So for us that don't know medical term, what is that?
It's the bone on the side of your foot that is right on the side of the pinky. So once I fractured it, I could no longer put pressure on my foot
at all.
So I had to, you know, I had to go get casted up. I was casted for about 4 or 5 months. When I got the cast off, it was right around prom time. The coach from UAB, Coach Edgar, he came up to Atlanta. Was like, you know, we want to see you play. Go down here, George Perimeter. You know, we know the coach, blah, blah, blah. So I go in there. I play. I probably played like 15, 20 minutes. Next thing you know, I did it again.
Ooh.
On the day of senior prom. So I went to prom that night, you know, took a couple of Advils. Then the next day, I ended up having to go get surgery. And I started off my college career coming back from the surgery of my 5th metacarpal.
Prior to the injury, Can you talk about some of the schools that were recruiting you and then what happened after the injury?
And even before that, I got injured before that. I got invited to the Nike All-American camp where, you know, they have, like, the top 100 players. And then during that camp, prior to that camp, I had Kentucky, Auburn.
Clemson.
Nebraska, St. John's, Rutgers, UCLA, Florida State, you know. So my main focus then was, you know, I'm going to go to ACC, SEC. So I'm in the camp. I get a knee to the thigh. I end up having a deep thigh bruise. At that time, I had verbally committed to Clemson. So after that, I wasn't able to perform. And next thing you know, a lot of scholarships just started dropping off. Mm-hmm. Because they was like, oh, you're not the type of player that we thought you were. I'm like, well, I got to take like two ibuprofens before every AAU game just so I can start to run up and down the court without feeling it. So naturally, a lot of the teams fell off because, as I say again, you know, they felt like I couldn't perform to the level that they wanted me to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what happened. And, you know, it's funny how things come around full circle, because then when I start to see these coaches that dropped off of me, every time I see them, dang. I wish we would have kept.
I'm telling you, man. Auburn, you mean Auburn fell off?
Dang, you know.
Auburn, if anybody should have stayed on the trail, it should have been Auburn.
Paul Hewitt from Georgia Tech. You know, I had the coach from Georgia. All of them. The coach that was at Clemson, I forget his name, but all of them, every time I see him, dang, you know, I wish we would have kept. You end up being one of the best guards in college,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I just go to show you, you know, things happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And when those injuries happen, that's when you really start to go through a tough time, because you really start to see who's with you for you and who's with you because of what you can do.
I want you to talk about the psyche when you're going through those obstacles, right? What is your psyche at that point? What are you thinking? How do you feel knowing that at one point you were at an all-time top five in the state, but now you've had a minor setback and you've lost those coaches trying to pursue you. What is your psyche?
For a minute, you know, as a kid, you like, dang, like, you know, I'm the same player, you know. So a minute, you get kind of hurt, you know. It's like you just feel a little bad, you know, because it's like I go from going to SEC, ACC level to, you know, Conference USA and where I ended up at. But it's bad, you know. You just like, am I not the same player? You know, sometimes you start to question your skills.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I said, I had good people around me that supported me that was like, you know what? You turn adversity into a positive. You use adversity to drive you. You use that to make you into a better player. So now when you do see them people, you make them regret not taking mm-hmm. you.
Who was giving you that message mostly?
Mostly it was my dad. Like, you know, he went through a lot of tough things growing up in Atlanta during the time in the city where, you know, when he grew up. So, like I say, he was just very big on mental toughness. If you can get that mentality down, everything else going to come after that because it starts up in your head first. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm telling myself I can't do it, then naturally I'm telling my body I can't do it. So I ain't going to put the same effort.
So you go to play in college. I'll let you tell us who you signed with, but you sign a scholarship, and if you can really talk about your experience in college. And the reason we're going through this, because I want, after you kind of tell your journey, your story, I really want to just focus on some of the lessons that you learned. So can you really just tell us about who you signed with and how those 4 years in college was for you?
I signed with the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Down in Birmingham, Alabama. The head coach was Mike Anderson, which now he's at Arkansas. But when I first came there, like I said, I was coming off the injury. You know, they was working me slowly. And when I first got there, my confidence was a little low because I'm coming off a full year not playing basketball. So naturally, it's like, can I do the same things? You know, am I the same type of player? So I get there, and one of my assistant coaches, Coach Giles, he basically changes my whole shot. While I can't run, he tries to start working me with the shot. And naturally, it wasn't comfortable for me, but in my head, I'm thinking, okay, well, he's the coach. He knows better. Let me do what, you know, he wants me to do. So So long story short, that messes up my total shooting game. I go from being a good shooter really to the most inconsistent shooter in the world. Because simple fact of, you know, I'm letting this guy change my shot. Instead of having confidence in myself, knowing, you know, I know what to do.
Sticking to what got you there.
Exactly. You know, and it totally changed. So my first year, I go through some struggle. I probably play like 6 minutes, you know, a game. Some games maybe more, some games maybe less. My sophomore year, I go up to 20 minutes a game, being one of the finalists for the Sixth Man of the Year award in the conference, which I got beat out by a senior at Tulane. I averaged around about 10 points, maybe 3 assists, a couple of steals. And then my junior year is the year I really took off. My junior year, Coach Anderson left. He went to Missouri. And Coach Mike Davis came in from Indiana. That junior year, we finished like maybe 16 and 17. But that was my best career. That was my best season. That was my breakout season. I ended up averaging 15 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, and like 2 steals. After that year, I should have went ahead and went to the draft because I would have been a first rounder. But having that lack of knowledge and the people around me really didn't have that knowledge, I didn't go. So I came back for my senior year. Fifth game into my senior year, I tore my ACL. Mm. So that whole year going, I got a medical register. So that year I get the surgery and I'm working on coming back. During that summer, I felt like the coaches didn't think I was going to come back and be the type of player. So certain things, you know, they didn't put me in summer school. That hurt me because as an athlete, you look for a summer school or a summer job to continue to pay for your apartment and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not in summer school, you're not going to get your scholarship check from the school.
Is that standard, though, that they, like, say that you did not have that injury? Would you have had your summer school?
Yeah, I believe
they
so.
They would have given
but
you.
They put it on and I was too close to graduating, so they couldn't put me on summer school.
Well, then I thought if you on scholarship, ain't you on scholarship all the time? Or they just peak when they want you to go, huh?
Basically. So they did me wrong on that. So, you know, that whole time I'm just continuing just working, getting my knee back right, playing over here in Birmingham in different leagues. Senior year comes. I have the typical policy, you know, another 15, 5, and 5.
Wow. So talk about the two styles, right? You played for two different styles. You played for one that was fast-paced, 40 minutes of hell, and then you played for another one that was a little bit more pro-style, kind of isolation at times. What do you say, or what would you say to young people trying to make the right decision as to the school I'm going to attend? Do you think that that's an important decision to make based on the right style, based on the coach, or is there another intangible?
I think at that point, it does matter on your career. It depends on the coach, and it does depend on the style. Mm-hmm. For me, I would say if I went back, maybe I would not have went to UAB. Maybe I would have went ahead and went to Marshall because Marshall was crewing me heavily, and the coach was basically like, you come up here, it's your team. And with UAB, I didn't have that. You know, I had other people that was better than me in front of me. So, you know, I basically had to wait my turn. Mm-hmm. But I believe if I would have went to Marshall, things probably would have been different knowing that you're able to shoot whenever you want to shoot. The offense is going to be based upon your skill. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to get players to come in to fit around you. So as far as going to the league, that probably would have propelled me to go to the league faster.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. That's true in other elements too. Like, and you say Marshall because Marshall is a smaller school, smaller conference. It's not one of those big name basketball schools. But the opportunity to go up there and shine
was big. But it ended up being in the same conference as UAB.
Exactly. So a lot of times you can't just go for the glitz and the glamour, mm-hmm. what's popular or what everybody else is doing. You got to look at what situation might provide you the best opportunity to showcase your talent. So exactly. I think that's one of the things you do look at as well, too.
Because when you're going to these schools, you're going to play against other big-name schools. You're going to get on the TV. But being able to be that dude and putting up 30 against a Duke instead of being on a pretty good team where you may only average 10. Mm-hmm. You know, you're on that stage showcase your skill. And that's what, you know, the pros are looking for. They're looking for who showcase other skills. Like the dude Hunter from Georgia State just got drafted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He got drafted off of what? Off of the NCAA upset. Like on that stage, he showed that he could shoot. Mm-hmm. And so that's what got their attention. You know, it wasn't that their team was good because they really wasn't that good. It was on that stage he showed them, oh, he's a pretty good shooter. So now you start going to the camps and they start seeing the same thing. You can get picked up straight off of your what you show during the tournament, NCAA tournament.
Yep, Pablo Story, NBA MVP Steph Curry, same thing coming out of Davidson.
You know, I even seen Paul play where he competed, and I would text him because these were the days when Derrick Rose was playing at Memphis. And so I would tweet, I would text Paul, and I would say, Paul, you think you can handle Derrick Rose? And he would say, of course I can. But it was interesting because they were going at it. And Paul was actually balling at UAB during that period where it was UAB playing Memphis, and those were some rival games. You remember that, Paul?
Oh, yeah, I remember. Like, you know, people used to sleep out and tent out just to get tickets to the game. Those games were always sold out. Mm-hmm. And then that's another thing. As you know, later on in my career, I chose to go with a smaller agent. And I think that really hurt my career in a professional way.
Let's talk about that because that's where I wanted to kind of transition to NBA. So you go through the NBA process. Unfortunately, you're not drafted, but you picked up as a free agent by the Milwaukee Bucks. But can you talk about, like you were just about to do, that experience?
Well, you know, I picked my agent right after school. He was a small agent. Went through the workouts. During the workout with San Antonio, I got injured again. I pulled my quad muscle, and that caused me to miss at least like 15, 20 workouts. And I think at that moment, that really took my draft stock from a late first round, middle to late, to falling off. Because I missed those workouts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had other agents come to me, yo, Paul, you sign with me. You know, I can get you a deal with Denver Nuggets. I'm cool with the general manager. You know, he's going to sign you based off my strength. And that's when I really start to realize how much politics is really involved in the game of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the player. It's about what agent. Because it's like, well, if I'm the same player and he wants to sign me to a contract, why don't he sign me because I'm with my other agent and not with you?
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's like, well, we got a great relationship with him. We know him personally. So it really starts to become, well, it's a favors league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do me this favor, I do you one back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really started to show it's about who you know and not what you can do at most times.
Who are some of the teams you tried out with before the injury?
San Antonio, Oklahoma City, the Houston Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say Boston Celtics? Boston Celtics, New Jersey.
And how were those workouts going prior to the injury?
Man, they were going good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was showing them what I needed to show them as far as being able to play smart, athletic, bigger than other guards, you know, able to score.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, you know, the injury along with the agent, that kind of just steadily pushed me back because – of the politics.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I could have switched agents. It would have been no thing. But in my mind, just the way I was raised, as a man, you can only keep your word. There's only a few things that you can always, you may not have no money, but you have your word and you have your character. So since I had told my agent that I was going to stick with him, I decided like that's what I had to do. I had to stick with him. I couldn't be one of the ones that flip-flopped or, you know, trying to run a game a certain way just to get where I need to get in life. I didn't feel like that was the right way.
And I don't want the audience to get it twisted, you know, with the whole injury thing, because injuries happen. If you play any sport or anything like that on a consistent basis, you know, in this level that Paul's talking about, it's almost year-round. You're going to get injured, but it really speaks to what he's talking about, the politics. Like, considering that's going to happen, you need to have somebody in your corner that has those connections and that will lobby for you relentlessly in that political system, because it's not really about your physical ability a lot of times. What you bring to the game is like who you know and who can vouch for you and what type of relationships that they have, that determines who gets those spots.
So we've gone from from Paul being in the seventh and eighth grade to wanting to beat his dad and competing against his dad, to then playing ninth grade on probably what I would have said, what I would say is probably one of the greatest high school teams assembled, getting injured, and just look at the obstacles, right? Look at the obstacles, having to go through senior year, getting having his foot, having a broken bone in his foot, then having an ACL tear, and just look at the ups and downs, and then finally getting the opportunity to try out and on the professional level with NBA teams. Like, I saw Paul play NBA Summer League with the Milwaukee Bucks, which I hope he can kind of talk about that experience here in a minute. But just look at the ups and downs and the steady and still the drive and the passion that you've had to overcome and that you've gone through. And I think it's important for the young people to hear this, because everything isn't roses. Life isn't a rose. You can't see through your rose-colored petals and think that you're going to wake up and you're going to go play basketball in the backyard against, or you may be the best on your street, and then you're going to play in the NBA. It's not like that. So, Paul, if you can kind of continue that story and talk about the Milwaukee Bucks and the Summer League and what you gained and learned from those experiences.
It was a great experience. You know, my first year, I think, was probably my best year of the Summer League. I played excellent. You know, they said they wanted to sign me. The next thing you know, they had to make a couple of trades to get John Salmon, and they picked up two point guard contracts, Royal Ivy and Luke Ridenhour. And so, you know, they sat me down and was like, yo, it's a numbers game. We don't have enough room for another point guard. So basically, there's nothing that we could do. They was like, you can still come to vet camp. At that time, I was like, well, what's the point of me going to camp if I know I can't make a roster? So I ended up chose to go over to Israel. Had a good year at Israel. They brought me back the second year. And I think the second year they had me starting, you know, it was the same proposal. Like, look, we have the contract. We just need for you just to continue to play good. And honestly, I think that went to my head. I got down there in Vegas and just started partying, you know, with the fella that was already on the team. You know, like Amir Johnson, Jody Meeks, you know, just started partying when I really lost focus of the reason why I was there. Mm-hmm. And that really hurt me because I didn't play that well in the summer.
A common theme that BG and I talked about on this podcast is you being 21, 22, having to make decisions that you're just not prepared to make. You know, looking back, you're 29 now. How old are you, Paul? 30 or 29? 28, about to be 29. Looking back and saying, man, the things I know now. Talk about the psyche at that point when you didn't make it that second time. But then also talk about what you've learned and knowing what you know now, what you would have done differently.
The psyche started to become, man, forget this. You know, it's all politics. It used to be a time where I couldn't even watch the NBA game because I see fellas that I played with, played against, killed them, and it's like, how are they on there? You know, I couldn't even watch. I couldn't even stomach to watch. I'm being honest. I couldn't. I wouldn't even watch it, you know. But, you know, looking back on it, it's two real things that I start to realize. One, God has a plan for everybody. You know, everybody's role is not going to be the same. It's going to be obstacles that go in there that you can't control. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, I started to realize that maybe at that age I wasn't ready to get that money. Mm-hmm. Because if I would have got that money, it's no man, I would have been out in these streets wilding. Yes. Man, I would have been out here probably like three kids because I could pay for them. I would probably been the one up in the strip club with like six, seven of my homeboys. You know, just wilding because that's the type of mentality I had because that's the type of mentality I thought that a basketball player was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just talking like you can't give up on yourself. Mm-hmm. You never can. You always have to work like you're the second person in line. You can never get content and you can never get comfortable. You can never do that because the minute that you do that, it can take your career from one level and take it to the next.
Last, hey, BG, now this is going to be hilarious. One day I called Paul, it was actually on Christmas, and the Lakers were actually playing on Christmas Day against the Miami Heat, I think, and we kind of talked on Skype just trying to catch up with Paul and make certain he was doing okay. And then he started talking about how he had been going out and he was in Bethlehem. And so it just kind of, it he was in Bethlehem. And I was like, you what? Yeah, man, I'm in Bethlehem.
Traveling, it's been amazing. You know, I've been able to go to Jerusalem, like you say, Bethlehem. You know, I've been able to see where Jesus walked, where he, you know, was nailed on the cross. You know, I've been very blessed to see a lot of different cultures. You know, it just opened up my eyes tremendously. You know, I've came back with a new mentality as far as finance-wise and just living. Because one thing I can say, as I've been over there, I've really seen that the grass is really not green on the other side. Like, people really do have it worse than we have it here in the States. Here, we're based upon convenience. Everything that we want is at our fingertips. And over there, it's not the case. Like I said, I've been in places where I had ice storms. Like I said, I had to take a dump in a trash bag, in a grocery bag, you know, just because we didn't have enough water to take a shower or to put into our toilets. You know, I've seen where the projects over there are 10 times more run down than here. I get on the elevator stinks. You got gum up and down the walls. Like, you walk in, you really have to watch your step because it's a loogie of spit. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been in those type of places, and you know, I've seen Israel was beautiful, France was beautiful, and then Russia, Ukraine were, it's tough, you know. So it's been a blessing, you know. I've been able to, it's taught me a lot of lessons in life, and not to take things for granted.
I wanted the audience really to be able to paint a picture and understand the journey that you've gone through from literally from ninth grade. And we really didn't take a deep dive into a lot of your professional stories, but again, we talked about on previous podcasts how we're asking 21 and 22 year olds, or even younger at this stage, 20 and 19, to make life decisions. Seeing what you've seen now and knowing the hard work that it takes, can you kind of talk to the young people and really just talk to them about what you know, what you've seen, what hard work is?
Well, for the young people, hard work is being able to put in work when nobody's watching. It's about when nobody's watching, are you going out there 2-3 hours to put in on your craft, whether it may be baseball, basketball, football, whatever it may be. It could be education. You know, it could be working with computers, math, science. But are you doing stuff outside of what's required for you to do? Or are you going to be the type of player that only works when they go to practice? Once practice ends, they don't touch a ball no more. They don't pick up a book anymore. Because you're not going to be able to get anywhere. You know, it takes dedication and time. That's what nowadays people don't have the patience. They want the instant success. You know, and granted, and sometimes it's not on the kids themselves. It's also on the parents. As a parent, what are you doing? Are you putting your kid in the best situation to where he can work and to where he can be successful? You know, instead of them days on Saturday, instead of sitting in the house all day and just letting him go out and run, are you taking him to a park and actually pushing him and showing him, like, look, I'll work with you. You're not out there by yourself. You want to put up shots, I'll rebound for you. You know, so at the same time, it's a two-way street. You know, and kids are not just making grown-up decisions at 19, 17, 18, 19. They're actually, nowadays, they're making grown-up decisions 9, 10 years old. You know, the way, like you said, the AAU game, the way they're starting to recruit kids, now they're trying to play with kids' emotions by, oh, you don't want to play with my team? I can give you a pair of shoes. I can give you this, give you that. As a kid, of course you're going to go where the free stuff is. But as a parent, is that the best environment for your child to get better and reach where they need to reach? And I think that's where a lot of little kids are getting messed up. And when they're, you know, starting to mature into that 19 and 20 year old, because now only thing they're basing their worth off of material things. And I think that really messes them up, you know.
I've enjoyed this talk and actually being able to sit down with somebody who's had exposure and has experienced what it takes to go through these different levels. On the professional side, all the way from high school, college, and then the professional ranks, and what that means. Because, I mean, I've learned a lot just sitting here, a lot of things that I thought, the politics and stuff like that, to really hear it from somebody that's been in it really makes it real, because you always wonder what happened to that guy that could really play. Like, right. What was it about him that, you know, he wasn't able to get all of the notoriety in the professional league? And you automatically would think, well, maybe he wasn't as good as the other guy. But then, you know, just sitting here listening to that, there's some other stuff going on behind the scenes that may be happening. One thing I will ask, though, Paul, is that once you get to that professional level, I got a job, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some days where I don't feel like going to the job. Mm-hmm. Does that happen when you're a professional athlete? Do you have those days playing out that long season that some of them games you just ain't feeling it? Or is it the competitive spirit that just pushes you through and you ready day in and day out?
I think everybody has times where they don't feel like, you know, you go overseas, it's a 10-month season. Some days you're not going to feel it, you know, but then it gets to, like I said, the mental game. Am I going to let my emotions impact how I perform? Mm-hmm. Or is that heart and that competitive spirit going to come out once I hit the court? It's like, well, you know what? I'm about to put on, you know, the best I can now because I'm here. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to go out and take a chance that the person that I'm guarding going to drop 40 on me. You know, I mean, that's just being realistic. I'm not going to go out and make myself look bad knowing that it's on me. It's not on the coach and not on anything else. And, you know, another thing that wants to, as far as the hard work, you know, people got to realize it. Nothing is given. You know, like you have to really work. And that's what kids are not understanding. You know, back then when we was younger, we would be outside all day. We would go from one driveway to another court. Mm-hmm. You know, even if nobody was playing, I remember me and my homeboy, I'd call him up, yo, what you doing? I had none. Sitting in the house. Mm-hmm. Man, come on up here, man. Let's put up some shots. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Let's go condition that. We would go out by ourselves, start at the bottom of my hill, run all the way up to the top, back down. Run up, back down, get a ball. Same thing. You know, so that hard work, it has to be a continuing drive where you're not satisfied at where you're at.
Was that
I can get better.
Was that drive coming from your dad or was that coming internally from you?
No, that was coming internally from me. Because my dad, you know, he might have been at work or somewhere else. It came from me knowing how good I wanted to be, knowing that I had to put in extra work.
Well, make this thing tangible to the people that's listening. I have a niece, and I try to talk to her. She'll listen to this podcast because my brother, who's an avid listener, he listens. And talk to her. Make it tangible. Because I can tell her what hard work is, meaning go out and do this many shots. Go out and run up this many hills. What is hard work? How many times would you run up the hill? How many push-ups would you do? How many shots would you take on a daily basis? Like, can you lay out a tangible hard work regimen that you would do that you could tell some young person that they need to start with this and build upon this?
Honestly, you know, if I first went out to run a hill, I would think to myself, how many can you do, Paul? I'm like, this hill, I can do 12. Mm-hmm. So I would set myself a goal. Boom, I do 12. Now, if I got to 12 and I realized, I still got a little bit more, in my mind, then it's like, you know what? I'm going to keep going until I can't go no more. You know, so it's not really something tangible. It has to be something that person wants for themselves, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, like we can, and I tell my little cousin all the time, I can tell you what to do. I used to tell him, do 25 push-ups when you wake up, 25 after you eat lunch, 25 before you go to bed. You got 75 push-ups. Mm-hmm. If you do that for a week, next week you should be able to go up to 30 per session. You know what I'm saying? Like every time you should be able to go up because naturally you're going to feel yourself getting stronger, be able to handle that. Mm-hmm. But he would never do it. Like I said, we can tell him all day, mm-hmm. but we won't never reach them until it gets inside of them. It's like, well, you know what? I do want to be a surgeon. I do want to be a professional athlete. And when they realize that if you're trying to reach that top level, you have no social life. Hmm. And that's where a lot of people get messed up. You can't have a social life. Mm-hmm. Friends and going to the party and this, you can't do that because that's another distraction that's going to put into your working time. Mm-hmm.
What do you say about that then, being able to sacrifice friends and relationships?
It's all about how bad you want it. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody has to know their end game. Mm-hmm. If I would rather talk to my friend than to go out there and work on my game, that means I'd rather my friend like me more than, you know, than going out here being the best basketball player I could be. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has, every professional athlete that I've also talked to that made it to that level, they had to sacrifice the social life for their craft.
Do you regret any of that?
No. Mm-hmm. No, because I got a, and for me, it might be in bed because I only got a small circle. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're too focused on being a socialite than an athlete, that means you got too many friends. Mm-hmm. You know, you got too many things that's taking you away from your attention. Your real friends, they're going to, oh, no, you ain't coming over. You know what I'm saying? Ain't you got some shots to put up? Mm-hmm. They're going to continue also helping remind you what your goal is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's what everybody trying to be on the Instagram, the Facebook, you know, not coming out the house no more, staying on the video game, you know, got their game partners and, you know, things of that nature. It ain't going to happen inside. It's going to happen outside with yourself and with that hard work. Because sometimes all you got is you, yourself, and I.
So I know we approaching the end of time because you got to go play in a game today. And you can kind of talk about that. But real quickly, talk about the state of AAU basketball from your viewpoint and from your vantage point. BG and I did a podcast on AAU coaches and just coaches in the black community and how they are really soliciting and using AAU basketball as more of a prostitution, more of a pimping game. What is your – because you've experienced actually playing AAU basketball, so you know the ins and outs. What is your perspective on AAU basketball today compared to what it was when you actually played?
It's a, in my eyes, it's a joke. I mean, I'm going to be, and that's the honest truth. Mm-hmm. One, you telling me you playing 40 plus games during the summer alone? What? That's too much on a kid's body. Because look, put this together. Just on this, you're playing, say, 40 games during the summer. Each summer when you're starting at 14 years old. So that's four summers. How many games is that already? 160? 160. Now in high school, you're going to play another 30 games. Mm-hmm. So 30 times four was at 120. So we already at what, 280? Mm-hmm. In college, you're going to play another 33 games. And then if you make it to the NBA, that's another 82 in the regular season. So you almost, to make the championship game, you're almost playing 100 games per season. Mm-hmm. How long you think your body going to hold up to that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then on your off day, you still got to lift weights.
You still got
to
practice.
You still got to practice. You still going to have to run and stay in shape. So, I mean, our body's not metal. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Like, and these coaches, and they're making these kids focus on, oh, how many shoes you got. You know, I can get you this pair of shoes every time, or I can get you this uniform to look cool, or, you know, I can get your parent this, I can get them that. But in actuality, they're not teaching our kids anything. They just want to take the best player, throw them out there, and be like, all right, you're the best player. You're supposed to win us the game.
But from a skills perspective, they're not developing their skill set.
They're not developing their skill set at all. And I think that's taking a hit in the NBA. Why you think, man, if you compare the game to Jordan, Anthony Hardaway, from the 90s and sometimes early 2000s to the game now, every rule that they've implemented, every change they made to the NBA has been to what? Lessen defense and increase scoring. Why? Because now it's turned to entertainment. Mm-hmm. How they flopping now? You got kids out here, 7 years old, flopping the same way they doing in the league. So tell me, so how are you teaching our kids? And the coaches are telling them that becomes just flop.
Just flop.
You see, so how are you teaching them to play correct defense? How are you teaching them to have that heart to care about the game? You tell them how to cheat, basically.
Giving them shortcuts.
You know, and nobody's developing them. Half these kids in the league, you know, some of these young rookies in the league pan out, don't even pan out. And that's the sad part about it. Mm-hmm. Why? Because their skills are only limited. LeBron James, the best player in the league. Has he really improved his jump shot? Has he really improved his low post game? No.
Not when it counts.
I'm just saying.
Thanks, LeBron.
But I'm just saying, and I'm using him as an example. He's the greatest player. You know, I'm not taking
That's a good measure.
But I'm using him because he is the greatest player, but it's still flaws in his game.
For sure.
And it's still them same flaws that he had when he was 15, 16 years old.
And it shows when it come time, when they play fundamentally sound teams and all that, he struggled. He struggled.
When you look at Jordan, one thing they say, Jordan, he had a go-to move. He going to go on the block. He going to give you the shimmy fadeaway. Mm-hmm. Paul consistently. Pierce, he's going to give you that elbow. I'm going to get to my spot, use my body, and with the form and release, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. But they're not teaching the same way these days. They just teach them just to go out there and play. Mm-hmm.
So what would you tell young people then? And in that regard, if you're trying to get to the levels that you've been at, and I need to get exposure because in a lot of ways the AU basketball game is giving them that exposure, what's the alternative?
The alternative is this. Instead of having your kid play 40 games, only limit him to 15, 20. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Only the big tournament, only three tournaments will get you enough exposure.
What are those three?
You have, well, they changed now, but you have the Peach Jam that's in Augusta, Georgia that just finished last weekend, and they had the championship game on ESPNU. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They got that one. They got one down in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Vegas, Orlando.
Yeah, like they have a lot of where Nike, Under Armour, and Adidas. Mm-hmm. Those three are the main companies that throw the big tournaments. Mm-hmm. And those are the tournaments you want to hit. You don't have to hit every one. You mm-hmm. just have to hit certain ones.
Mm-hmm. So ones that you're going to hit and limit your game to those important ones.
Exactly, because you got to think about it like this. If you're playing 40 games, that's 40 times somebody gets to see you. So, therefore, they get to dissect your game a lot more.
All the way down.
You see what I'm saying? So, that one player that might have started off to one and dropped to 20, once they really looked at him 40 times, it's like, well, he really can't dribble. That was just a good game. You know what I'm saying? He really can't shoot. And that takes down mm-hmm. your ranking.
Right.
You know? And then on the same, focus on the fundamentals. Once you get the fundamentals down, then you start going to, let me go ahead, work my game in the post. Let me work mid-post. Let me work three. Work every aspect of your game. Just don't focus on, well, and this is where a lot of, they see Steph Curry. I want to be Steph Curry. So what all they focus on is dribbling and shooting the three. You see, they're focusing on players that are already there, but they don't understand what those players had to do when they was that age in order to reach where they're at.
Tell that story. I know you got to go. Tell that story real fast about what you told me yesterday about Steph Curry and his dad forcing him to shoot closer to the basket versus the three.
You know, when Steph Curry was younger, he didn't start off shooting threes. He was airballing threes because he didn't have the strength to shoot it from the three to make the basket with the proper form. So his dad would make him have to stay around the mid-range area. And then as you get stronger and as you perfect your form, then you when you go out, now when you shoot it, you're not putting your form at risk. Instead of pushing the ball, you're actually shooting it with the same form. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, you know, a lot of kids, you know, and that's another thing, parents, if you really focus on those things, if a coach is telling your kid and he's 8, 9 years old just to shoot three, that's not a good coach for your kid. If your coach is telling you, oh, well, your kid is taller than everybody, we're just going to make him the five, the center or the power forward, that's not a good coach for your kid. Because why? Because just because he's taller than everybody now doesn't mean that he's going to be taller than everybody when he gets older. So if they're only focusing on, oh, we're just going to have him be in the paint, and when he reaches 15 and he only stops at 6'1", then where is his shooting skills going to come in? Where is his ball handling skills going to come in? They're going to be behind. Why? Because the coach never taught him. Why? Because he was never able to dribble.
BG, he dropping gems, BG.
They only put him down low.
He dropping gems, BG.
Same thing with schools and stuff like that. Like if the school is just teaching the test and not teaching what that kid is going to need to progress from grade to grade and get better each year, that ain't the school for you. You need to make a trip. You need to be involved in that.
And it does go to school. You know, me and my dad were having a conversation. Schools and the black community really started to go down when schools started to take these vocational classes outside of the school. Back then, they used to have you with the laundry, with the mechanical, with the masonry, with every sewing, you know what I'm saying?
Everything. All that stuff, I agree.
Because when you did that let them know, like, all right, I may not be a book smart, but when you leave here, you're going to be able to go and get a job in a professional world. Mm-hmm. But now they only want to try to teach books. And granted, everybody is not going to be able to learn, but that's just the reality. Everybody can learn. You know, if this person can do it, that everybody's different. So you can't never compare one kid to another. Yeah, because they came out the same situation, but you never know, one mindset may be different than another. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Their parents may have, you know, prepared them differently than another. You know, you never know what's going on inside that person. And I hate when people always try to compare. Well, no, I don't have no sympathy for that person because I know somebody that went through the same thing. They made it just fine. But you don't know what else they're going through.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You see, and that's where it's coming. And that's why people don't care these days, because they feel like, well, I shouldn't care. I came through the same thing. I made it. So why should I go back and help somebody else when nobody helped me? And, you know, and that type of feeling, it really hurts me, because it's like, man, it's so many, especially African-American kids out here that have the skills, that have the brain, that have the, you know, that have that want, but we just don't have enough people that's going to have the patience and tolerance to put up with them.
He just touched on something. I did want to get into that. He touched on something that I had never even thought about, but it's very 100% accurate. Taking vocational out of the school. Do you said something that's really real? Taking those out, the home economics, the sewing, that's really taking away from a generation of students to develop skill sets to go out and work in corporate America. I mean, to go out and work and have a living. And that's huge.
It kills the community too, because the community needs those people from within that have those skills that can come out and do that stuff right there in the community and keep that cycling, that business and that entrepreneurship cycling through the community. But when you take that out and you don't prepare the people from that community to be able to do that, now we got to depend on somebody else to tax us to come in and do that work.
Do they even have Shade Tree Mechanics anymore?
They have nothing, man.
You remember back in the day when you could find a guy on the side of that would work in front of you. This guy used to work in front of my grandmother in them house.
You do have those. Don't get me wrong. You do have the AutoZone that may be sitting there and that may be waiting for, you know, somebody bringing their car. Like, oh, what you got wrong? Oh, I can help fix it. You do have those, but it's more the older gentlemen.
It's old, yes. It's not no young boys.
It's not really young, because like when you took that out, me and my fiance was talking about this the other day. I'm going to throw this comparison out here. Some people may not like it.
Extension cord.
Man, what? I needed a quick second. Let me regain focus, but it's... you know, when they came over, and I was telling this, before they had slaves, Africans were in villages. They were in, you know, they had their clan or, you know, whatnot, whatever what they called it. But in that, they had somebody that maybe did the farming, somebody that, you know, cleaned the clothes, somebody that, you know, raised the sheep or whatnot. You know, they had everything within there that they needed to survive in their community. So now what they do, they came in. One, they brought new stuff that we'd never seen before that we couldn't trade for within, you know, the country. So they bring it in. It's like, oh, you want this? Well, I need you to do this. They start showing this shiny money to them that really had no purpose or no weight within the community. But they're thinking, because it's new, because it's quote unquote shiny, I need that. So we start giving up each other for those material things. It's almost the same thing how they're doing with schools now. Most of the laundromats are owned by the Asian community. Why is that? Because we don't have the education ourselves nor the money to buy out these places. So it's like you're taking away what we could be making money for ourselves and making room for the outside world to come in and take that place. Why? Because politics. They need a good relationship with the Asian community. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you're taking away from us just to give to other people. And it's like, at what point do us as a people realize we really need to start investing and giving back to ourselves?
Black empowerment. We talk about that all the time, BG. You
know, all the time.
Instead of, all right, like the boycott. We got plenty of cars out here. Let's give somebody a ride. But we've been misled to think that it's all about what I can get, that we are crab in a barrel. You know what I'm saying? Like, people have said that so many times. That's what these little kids are actually growing up to. But it's not about, you know, me helping somebody. It's, oh, I need to get it myself. You know, and it's sad, and that's why we got so much violence going on, because they've been raised to think, well, everybody's gonna die at some point. So if I go at 21, shoot, I didn't think I was gonna make it past 16. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's just being honest. Like, you'd be surprised, man. I had a kid the other day in the church. My boy Matt was like, Paul, come here. He was like, he told the little kid, man, tell him what you said. I said, so what you say? I'm thinking it's gonna be like, shut up, or I hate you, this, that. Kid, probably like 7. Guess what he said, though? Mm-hmm. This man said, I don't care, suck these nuts.
In church.
To an adult.
7 years old.
7 years old. This man literally said, I don't care, suck these nuts. Mm. Man, like what? Who's teaching you this?
Right.
Right. Like, who allowed you to be around when they talking like this to hear that and pick it up? You see, like, if I was around my parents, I would rarely hear cussing. You know what I'm saying? I would rarely be able to see something. If they wanted to do something, hey, it's time you go play with your friends. And yeah, for me, it ain't like you sending me off. It's more, cool, that's what I want to do anyway. Right. You know, but nowadays, they sit in here, they would drink in front of them. They would smoke their weed in front. You know, they would do things in front of them. It's like, I'm not going against you being able to do it. You're grown. But at the same time, just don't put your kids around it. You know what I'm saying? Don't put them automatic in that environment, because you already starting them off with a negative slate.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're preaching today, sir. So, Paul, you got a story to tell, and I really feel like, and I told you this yesterday, I really feel like life after basketball is going to even be more. This is a journey. This is just a part of your journey. Even doing this podcast, and I'll tell you this, but even doing this podcast is really just the dress rehearsal for a larger platform for you. And I truly believe that. So just real quickly, how can people get a hold of you? What's your Instagram handle? And then secondly, what's next in regards to your professional career? Where are you playing next year? Have you given up on the dream to play in the NBA? What's next?
First off, people, you can reach me on my email, Decatur4, DECATUR, @gmail.com. My Instagram is Mr. International 4 _LBG. And as far as what, and I got a Facebook, Paul Delane III. And don't be misled. I got my dad picture up there with his beard on, great beard. So that is still my page. But, you know, next, right now, you know, my agent's looking at different offers that we have. And we're just trying to see, like I said, what's the best fit for me? Because I feel like last couple of years, the team and the situation that I've been on has been more about the money than the fit. And so this year, I really want to go somewhere where it best fit me, where I have the freedom and the coach has the trust in me and the confidence in me to where I can just play and not have to try to go and fit somebody else's game or be somebody else's robot. So right now we're just in the process of seeing where that will be.
So are you gonna get an NBA one more try, or are you done with that particular dream?
You know, with that's why I want to go somewhere where I have a good fit, so therefore I can play the way I know I can play. And then after that, hopefully, you know, get another summer league invite, training camp invite, and go from there.
Gotcha.
But it's very crucial that I do have a breakout season this year. And if not the NBA, you know, it's cool. I just probably come back overseas. But at the same time, no matter where it is, I just want to put myself in the best position now to be successful so I can take that next step in my career and not just be at the same point throughout the rest of my career.
And he talked, BG, he spoke about his dad. And that great beer. But when I tell you somebody that can cook, man.
Throw down.
Be throwing down. Paul, can he not cook?
He can. I'm telling you, everybody, man. When he cooking that potato salad, I'm like, man, he only bring it out about twice a year. You got to put in a special request. Yeah. When that time he barbecuing, man, that man cook anything. Well, I ain't going to lie to you.
Man, BG, when I tell you that man can cook, man. BG, what's your last word, sir?
Man, I'm just thankful for Paul making time. He's been busy this weekend with the camp, and then he's finna go play a game now. But
he worked with us, been patient with us, and I just appreciate him coming and spending time with us and talking, man, because we initially started out just talking about the you know, kind of the basketball story, but you hear the young man talk. He got that thing on him, and he really talking to the consciousness, and it's really invested in coming back and sharing his resources and his experiences with the young people in his community where he come from. So, you know, anytime we have somebody do that, man, I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, like I said, just thank you guys for just thinking of me to come on here, because I it was cool. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, you know, I listened to you guys, you know, and it's just cool to actually be on something like this. Mm-hmm.
And
be able to give my opinions and, you know, give some advice, because at the end of the day, I just hope that it helps somebody.
Oh, it definitely will. And just in closing, you know, I think people need to go back and, after listening to this podcast, rewind it to the beginning of the podcast, because we went through so much, and I want to reiterate where we started. And where we started was Paul is back in his home state, in his home city, and he is here putting his resources and his finances to develop, empower, and build the youth of his community. He started at, and we spoke about the ages being 6 to 9. And from that experience, we walked you through a journey of his personal story. And he spoke about the AAU coaches and how that whole thing is a joke. But he's able to say that because, in my opinion, he's actually becoming the verb that we talk about, but he's actually doing the opposite of what these young people are experiencing. Point being, he's not a hypocrite. And I don't know how many people caught that, and I wanted to make certain that I resurfaced that so that people understand that everything he's telling you, which is real life experience and overcoming challenges, and telling you what it takes to be a professional athlete for those young people that listen to this story, he gave you some tangible things, but he also gave you a story that is not roses and everything is seen through rose petal glasses. But at the same time of walking you through that story, he's at a point now where he's building his community and his youth. So symbolically for me, and I hope the young people and the podcaster that listen to this story, they can see he's not just talking about it, but he's actually doing it. So Paul, from that perspective, you know, I've always admired the hard work and the work you put into. But more importantly for me, and me being able to see you from when you played in a middle school game to see where you're at today, man, I just admire the growth and the wisdom, because how many people can have the wisdom and the growth and to say, hey, this thing called basketball is bigger than me. These are life lessons. So I'm really just grateful that you took the opportunity out of your schedule to really come and partake in this conversation.
It's bigger than one person. It's bigger than 10 people. It's bigger than 20. You know, it has to be a whole movement. It has to be like a culture. Like, it has to be a way of life.
It had to be a way of life. That's why we have the New South Movement, which is really what we're trying to do on a smaller scale. And hopefully it'll continue to trend and it'll be a larger movement.
Paul, do you have any upcoming camps, future camps going on in the area? Anything planned?
It's a tentative date. Okay. It will be the second week in August.
The 15th?
Like 15th.
So that, okay,
yeah,
so the 15th.
Like 15th.
Yep. Okay.
Or maybe the 8th, but the 8th would be kind of difficult because kids are starting to go back to school and going school shopping and this and that. So I figured maybe the 15th, good time, get that transition and, you know, give parents to be tired by then. So they'll be looking for something to, you know, give their kids to do. So
you have any means, the way of them finding out about it or anything like that yet?
It would definitely be on Instagram.
Okay.
On my Instagram. And like I say, if anybody hear this and they're interested, they can easily just shoot me an email. You know, hey, Paul, I want to, what you think about this? Or, you know, I live in Atlanta area. I mean, maybe good trainers, good coaches, you know, things of that nature, any advice that has to do with basketball, just hit me up. You know, I'm more than willing to help anybody out the best way that I can and steer them in the right direction.
That's good.
That's real good. So y'all hear this, single moms that live in the Atlanta area, got nephews, nieces. I'm telling you, get a hold of this guy. Reach out to this guy. Ping him on Instagram, shoot him an email on Gmail, because he's one of the few that's authentic, genuine, and really looking out for the best interest of the young person. It's not about him. It's not about his own brand, but it's about developing and instilling his knowledge into the young person. So yeah, that's fine, man. BG.
Yes, sir.
How can the people reach?
So you can hit us up, freelunchpodcast.com, for podcasts and blogs. Also, check us out on Twitter, Free Lunch Pod. Let us know what you think about this episode and any of the previous episodes that we've done. And you can check for us on Instagram, Free Lunch Podcast.
Paul, you gonna shout out your sisters at all, your mom, your dad, or are we gonna forget about them?
Well, I mean, since you don't already brought it up, you're gonna put me on the spot, you know what I'm saying? We're going to go ahead and throw a shout-out to Ariska Janelle Delaney.
Ah, you put the middle name.
The whole government. You know, my beautiful niece, Delaney Lynn Hammond. you know, Karan, her husband, Aaron, my Aaron Nicole Delaney.
Oh, don't
Shakia, Monique Delaney. You know, my mom, Naomi Renee Black. My dad, Paul Lewis Delaney Jr., and my fiance, Sasha Elizabeth Wright.
y'all just been called out. So, and then say your Instagram one more time.
And then let me not forget now, Kristen Ellis.
Kristen.
Down there in Birmingham. You know what I'm saying? She always be hitting the brothers up, checking in on me here and there. So I ain't forgot about you.
She listened to the show.
Yeah. So Instagram is at Mr.International4_LBG. You can reach me. I also got Facebook, Paul Lewis Delaney III, and email one more time, Decatur4, that's Decatur4@gmail.com.
Hey, great show. Listeners, thank y'all for listening and tuning in. This is the Free Lunch Podcast. We are home to the New South Movement. No game.
Let's go, let it go now. Let's go, let it go now. Let it go, let's get it. Super mathematics, not a problem. No lie for that old block. So sign away for that bull rock. Super small, handcrafted art designs. No, they know not. Flow tougher than tough time. Blacker than the ground, they drum line. No overdose, I'm overwoke. I'll be away from crunch time. Yeah, everywhere like sunshine. I lead right cross. Punchline, I beat the track. I beat the track. Brown paper breakfast. Lunchtime, dinner date, dessert tray. Wrong with all. Flow hungry, you see the sign between the lines. It's G's only. No dummies, I flow lovely. They go nothing. They catch a feeling. These hoes touchy. I tell that jump off. No bunch. No awakening. Home study, but you're so pretty. Bless your soul, sometimes the best way to touch it. Stand and go. Let's go, let's go, let's get it. Let's go, let it go now. Let it go, let's get it. Get it, got him, got him. Let's go, let's go, let's get it. Let's go, let it go now. Before I chose the path chose me. This is the Lord's plan, divine decree.